Hey everyone, Cameron here. Appreciate you tuning in. This episode is brought to you by Mad Rabbit Tattoo, the leader in tattoo aftercare. Also, shout out to the Mad Rabbit Tattoo guys for recently appearing on Shark Tank. As always, appreciate if you could subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. This episode features Braxton Cave, who is Vice President of Aftermarket Operations at Lippert Industries, which is a successful public company based here in the United States. Braxton also spent 4 years in the NFL after a decorated collegiate career at Notre Dame University. He was a 3-year starter at Notre Dame, an All-American, 2-time Remington Trophy finalist, and he also played in a national championship game during his senior year. Braxton's a great father and community man who I feel we can all learn from. He has a special way of motivating and encouraging others, and you can sense his passion for service and his natural ability to lead in this conversation. I hope you all enjoy as much as I did, but for now, let's hop into the show. Braxton Cave, how are you, man? How's it going?
Doing well. Glad to be here.
Good to hear, man. I guess starting out here, it'd be great to if you could just share with the audience like who you are and how you spend your time.
So my name is Braxton Cave. I'm sure we'll make our way through this through the podcast, but born and raised in Northern Indiana, right in the shadows of Notre Dame. So the football journey, a long one, started playing ball when I was 9 years old, and attended local high school here, Penn High School, went on to play at Notre Dame, and then 4 years in the NFL. Now, businessman and a dad, so that consumes a lot of my time, and probably all my time, I should say. But trying to have impact in every area of life that I'm focusing in.
Love to hear that, and you can definitely see that with the success you've had in the different areas in life. Would love to sort of hear how you got into football. Seems like you were almost destined to go to Notre Dame. So if we could just hear like from you as a kid first starting out to Notre Dame, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. So, I was able to play early. Typically you were only allowed to play with starting in fourth grade. I got in third grade because of my size. I can remember as a third grader, the weight limit to be able to carry the ball was 114 or 115 pounds. And as a third grader, I had to weigh in naked in a trash bag to make weight. So that's really how my football journey began. I honestly, baseball was my first love. Loved baseball, played a lot of golf growing up. But there was something about the competitive nature and physical aspect of football that always drove me to it. And then obviously, always being a big kid, there was always some high hopes that football would be a sport that I would play in. So, third grade, tackle football, learning, a bunch of kids running around, don't know what's going on. And, just made my way up through the ranks in that order.
Yeah, so I guess you probably had a lot of success in high school. I think you were a Under Armour All-American. So I guess what was your recruiting process like, and when did you really know you'd be going D1 or superpower football like Notre Dame?
Yeah, so I started early as a sophomore on my team, so got a lot of playing time as a sophomore. Junior year came along. And the recruiting trail started to pick up. So being a powerhouse team in Northern Indiana, a lot of schools come through and met with our head coach, would always want to know, who's the guys this year. So that really kicked things off. In the end, I think I had 40 some odd scholarship offers. But really when I got the offer from Notre Dame, it was kind of a no-brainer. Just growing up here, always wanted to go to school at Notre Dame, play at Notre Dame. My great grandfather, my uncle played at Notre Dame. I'm named after a Notre Dame football player. I really had, and then you add in the aspect, I come from a strong Italian family. My mother, there was no way my mom was going to let me get too far away from home. So
That makes sense. Yeah, I felt the same way. Fortunately, Baltimore, where I went to college, was 5.5 hours away, so wasn't backyard, unfortunately, but at least wasn't on the other end of the country. So that's great that right. you're able to stay close to home and carry on that family tradition. Sort of growing up watching Rudy and just being from the Midwest, really knowing the culture of Notre Dame, like, what's it really like being in that and being in such a historic program? Like, what do people maybe not see or pick up from the outside?
Yeah, I think one thing to point out that a lot of people don't realize is that Notre Dame's only a school of 8,000 undergrad students. So when you hear Notre Dame, you think of this, you know, big, glamorous school, and but it's really small. It's a tight-knit community. You know, going to school there is very academically challenging, which, you know, was great for me. You know, kept me in line, made me truly focus. And you know how it is playing, when you're playing ball, that's takes up so much time, so much of your energy, that it's hard to focus on anything else. But in a program like that, you're forced to. So, you know, I loved every minute of it. Truly set me up for success later on in life.
What were your favorite parts of playing at Notre Dame? You know, you played in the national championship and got some special accolades. So what did those mean to you, and maybe what moments meant the most?
I think one of the biggest things is just the brotherhood that was built while I was there. You know, I'm still, to this day, we created a group text message with 10 of us during senior week leading up to graduation, and we talking it every single day still. And you know, when we came out of school, 8 of us were playing in the league, and now there's only one guy left still playing. There's wives and kids and all kinds of other stuff now instead. So it's been cool to see the group transform and, you know, grow up, I guess you could say. But you know, that's probably the biggest part, you know, the bond and brotherhood. The other part of it is just, you know, every week you're playing in a game where no one wants anything more than to knock off Notre Dame. So, you know, you're going to get the best shot from everybody. Like you said, playing in a national title game that obviously didn't go the way we wanted it to. But the experience, it was so, you know, it was an amazing season that we went through in 2012. It was so disheartening the way it ended, because you know that you're so close to doing something so great and that you'll never, ever get an opportunity to do it ever again. But it was a special year with a special group of guys, for sure.
Definitely. I remember watching that game and watching you guys that season with you and Manti Te'o and just a bunch of really talented guys. So I can imagine that would have been so much fun to play with everyone. Either out of that group of 10 or out of folks you either encountered in the NFL or in college, what guys did you respect and admire the most?
You know, I have a great bond with the guys who I roomed with. So, you know, Kyle Rudolph, Dane Crist, Mike Golick Jr., Jake Golick, Trevor Robinson. I mean, Harrison, there are so many guys. We all lived in a big house, so there was always guys filtering in and out, and you know, we just had a blast. And you know, I respect all those guys. They're all doing great things now. Both, you know, Kyle still playing, Harrison's still playing, but you know, Mike's got his face on ESPN every day. You know, and the other guys are very successful in business and they have families. So it's just been it's been a unique experience, and you know, I can't say that I admire anyone more than those guys that I spent so much time with.
That's awesome. I remember as a little kid watching Kyle play at Cincinnati Elder, actually. And then at Notre Dame, and then he's like been on my fantasy teams and fantasy football. So that's pretty cool. I guess then between the Alabama game and going to the NFL, what was it like leading up to entering the NFL, and how was that experience?
So it was definitely a unique experience for me. the agency I signed with, Athletes First, based out of Newport Beach, California. I lived out there for a few months leading up to, I played in the Senior Bowl and then the scouting combine. You know, there was a lot of hype going into the combine and in that time of my life, because there was an expectation for me to beat the 225 bench press record. I think it was 49 at the time, set by Stephen Paya. And leading up to it, I had hit 46 in the workout. So they, you know, we figured with a few weeks of prep and, you know, the energy of hitting the stage and doing it in front of people, that there was a good shot of that. And I ended up getting hurt at the Senior Bowl. You know, didn't have a great week while I was there. And, you know, that's where I wasn't able to bench at the combine. You know, they poke and prod and put you through MRIs. And so that's when things kind of shifted for me. You know, leaving as a senior, as an All-American at Notre Dame, you have high expectations of yourself to, you know, be a high draft pick. And then, you know, when draft day rolls around and you see your status plummet, you know, it's that was kind of a life-changing moment for me.
Between having a less than you were hoping for outcome with the draft, what was your attitude going into the sort of rookie camp and in that first season? And, you know, like, having so much success before, I'm sure this was some true adversity. So how did you tackle that?
Yeah, so I just knew going into it, I was going to have to, you know, truly just put my head down, go to work, rely on who I knew I was as a player, my work ethic, all the training that I had done leading up to that moment. I knew it was going to change the way that my career would go, because, you know, as an undrafted free agent, it's an uphill battle. And so that's just what I tried to do. And, you know, I definitely didn't play as long as I would have liked. My goal was always to make it 10 years, didn't hit that goal, but, you know, if anything, got in the league, got some good experiences, met some great dudes. You know, I got to enjoy an experience that I had dreamed of as a child. It didn't live up to what I wanted it to, obviously, but can definitely say that, you know, I gave it everything I had while I was in there.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, making it to the NFL and playing for 4 or 5 years. Is something nobody can take away from you. So that rocks. I guess, how did your goal shift between when you were going into the draft or going into the NFL and sort of life after when you hung up the cleats? And do you think that was something that started forming right then when you entered the league, or something you had to discover with some time off after leaving the game?
No, so, you know, I had, like, when I was at Notre Dame, they do a good job of doing some networking events. That was always important to me. I'm a highly extroverted person, so anytime I can get around people, meet people, I'm all in for that. So I participated in a lot of networking events, got to know a lot of good people, and knew that at the end of the day, when football was going to end at some point. But I knew I had a Notre Dame degree and a great Notre Dame network to lean on. And so when I hung him up, after the 2016 season in Detroit, my wife and I were back in Indiana for the off season. My contract was up. My agent was negotiating with a couple teams out west. And, you know, I just kind of had that moment. My wife was pregnant with our first child. And, you know, to sum things up, in my short career, I went from Cleveland to New England to the Redskins, back to Cleveland to Detroit. And so, you know, it's one thing to do that as a single dude or just you and your wife or girlfriend. It's a whole other thing when you add a family into that. And that's not what I wanted for my family. The teams we were negotiating with didn't want to offer full guaranteed contracts. So the last thing I wanted to do was move my family and soon to be child across the country that could have been there. We could have been there for a week, right? And that's just part of the ugly side of the NFL that most people don't know or see. But ultimately, I knew that I had a Notre Dame degree, and I was just ready for the next chapter of life.
Yeah, that'd be tough, getting to go to Notre Dame and play in your backyard and then have to sort of go across the country. Did you know you wanted to go back to Indiana where you grew up? Like, would you say you're a homebody, or it's just kind of how things have worked out?
Yeah, I mean, my entire family's from here. My wife's family is down in Dallas. I always wanted to be closer to here, whether in Chicago or Northern Indiana, just because of, like I said, the Notre Dame network. I love being close to campus and being able to be involved with the university. So we knew we'd at least start out here and then kind of see where things went. So I love Texas, but man, it's a little too hot for me in the summers.
I am with you there. I spent a summer in Houston, and just walk out to your car at 7-8 in the morning, already dripping sweat. It's a total.
Yeah, right.
So I can't blame you there. Austin's pretty cool, but the farther south of the Gulf you get, it gets kind of miserable. So you have a great job with Lippert, and you've absolutely crushed it. How did you get started there? And I guess what's your progression been to being in a more managerial executive role?
So when I decided to hang him up, I got a call from the CEO of the company I work for now, Lippert. We're in the RV, marine, automotive space. And most people don't know this either, but the Northern Indiana in the city that I live, you know, that neighbors next to me is the RV capital of the world. And so he reached out. We had known each other from church. And, you know, he just said, hey, you want to come? Would you mind coming to meet with me? And I'm like, man, I don't want anything to do with the RV industry. But he's like, no, we got a special thing going here. I'd love to tell you about it. And, you know, I thought, you know, what the heck? I'm young. Let's, you know, give this thing a shot. And then we'll go from there. And I sat down with him. His name's Jason Lippert, and he's the CEO of our company. And just hearing his vision and passion for not just business, but the creating an amazing culture and being able to use business as a force for good, I couldn't turn it down. And so I joined in the it was called the Manager in Training Program at the time. It's been recently renamed to the Leader in Training Program, and really just learned the company from the ground up. And so, you know, I tell people the story of my first couple of weeks with the company. I had to do my module with the service team, and it was August, and you know, I was out servicing parts and crawling under units out in the middle of, you know, nowhere, basically in Northern Indiana. And I just remember climbing back into the work truck one day and just being like, what the hell did I just do to myself? Right. And, you know, but I listened to his words, and I trusted him to just put my head down, go to work. And the rest would take care of itself. It was a big deal to me that, you know, he expressed how, you know, the company had never had someone with the leadership exposure that I have had, and that would go a long way. So, you know, I went through the training program. I got a couple promotions of just running smaller manufacturing cells, so then getting the opportunity to run my own business unit. And then this year, I took over as vice president of ops and distribution for our aftermarket division. And so it's been a crazy ride, that's for sure. I've learned a ton. I'm still learning every day. But it's been a blast. You know, the biggest thing that I was fearful of coming out of football was just losing like that locker room atmosphere and that brotherhood and camaraderie. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't have fallen into a better opportunity with a better group of people. So they've really given me the autonomy to build my teams and surround myself with really good people. And it's been great.
That's awesome. I really like that, in that leadership or leader in training program, that they sort of had you out in the field doing the work. Is that so important to be able to empathize with the people who you're going to ultimately be overseeing? I know the CEO of DoorDash, one day every month he goes and like serves as a Dasher, and also like every day he takes support calls. And I think that's something that people shouldn't take lightly. You know, like you got to be above no task, and have to be able to ultimately understand and empathize with what the others are doing. I'd say a lot of like younger people, and then also folks transitioning into new roles, can have trouble finding direction, or sort of get lost in people saying like, oh, just do what you're passionate about. What would you say for people in those positions, whether it's a young person coming out of college or someone looking to make a career switch, and thinking through maybe their next opportunity or what they want to accomplish?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is you have to have some passion, and there's definitely got to be passion behind what you're doing. And like I told you before, I wasn't passionate about the RV industry, but I was passionate about the potential opportunities. And I was passionate and am passionate about the culture and being able to lead and impact people. And so I think that's step one, is you got to find out what, you know, what gets you going, what wakes you up in the morning, and then have that as your goal, and know that you're not going to start out there. That, you know, very rarely happens, because it takes a lot of hard work. And if you're not passionate about it, it's just miserable every single day.
I think that's so important when you find yourself in those trying times where you're doing something new and you're messing up. Like you have to be able to know your why, and why you're doing that and coming in. And when you're surrounded by great people and in a great culture, like you're talking about, sort of like the experience with football, then, you know, you've got both those people around you to carry you forward, and then just the culture in general. I guess what are your goals with yourself and the business, and where you want to go, and where the business wants to go?
Yeah. So, you know, we're a publicly held company. You know, my goal is to double where we're at today. And so the group that I'm after, that I'm overseeing through the ops and distribution piece, my goal is to double the business by 2023, which is a lofty goal, but it's definitely feasible. We can do it. The aftermarket side of our business is a newer piece to the business. So there's a ton of runway there. It's just being able to put the right structures in place. It's exciting because it's definitely doable.
How is that? Audacious, hairy goals, or big, hairy goals? There's something I keep seeing around that. Or like, even if it sounds like you can't hit it, you just got to do it.
Right.
And you got to move forward towards that. So that's great. Transitioning to your approach to health and wellness. You look a little different from your playing days. When did you start to take that side of things seriously? And I guess what's your relationship been with exercise and nutrition after playing football?
So nutrition and working out has always been a huge part of my life. My dad was a bodybuilder, so it's been around. I've been exposed to it my whole life. You know, when I decided to hang them up, I was around 315 pounds. And today I walk around about between 245 and 250. And so, you know, I did the same thing that 99% of everyone else does. And that's, you try every diet and fad thing possible until you find what sticks. And ultimately what it's come down to is just, you know, eating healthy whole foods in moderation and the consistency behind it. You know, my first 30, 40 pounds fell off, you know, as soon as I didn't have to eat, you know, all the crazy calories to keep my weight up. And, but I really had to work for the next 30 or 40. And so just locking in the diet, changing up the workout routine, didn't have to go in there and try to lift every single weight in the weight room. You know, the biggest piece has been the clean and healthy eating. It's, You know, I don't care, you know, I don't care what diet people choose to do, as long as you can do one that sticks and you can be consistent on. And that's what I found on a lot of the diets that I tried before, is just, they weren't, I couldn't be consistent on them. I couldn't make them a lifestyle. And a lot of it was just the discipline piece. And so once I was able to lock that in, I, you know, was able to drop a lot of the weight.
Makes sense. What exercises and activities have you enjoyed after football? Do you still go in and throw up 225, 45 times, or what's your regimen?
So my training regimen right now, so I'm actually on, I'm on day 16 of 75 hard. I don't know if you've heard of that before or not.
I've not.
So 75 hard was created by Andy Frisella. He's the CEO of First Form Supplements. You know, I'm always looking for things to challenge me, and you know, I'm one of those guys that gets easily bored. And so I'm constantly looking for something to challenge. And so right now my program is, I'm working out twice a day, once in the morning. I'll do a little, about 30 minutes of cardio, followed by an hour of resistance training. And then, you know, work throughout the day and, you know, try and hit my diet spot on. And then at night I do another 45 minutes of cardio, whether it's, you know, I'll walk with the dogs or a jog, just something where I'm getting out and moving. So, and I'm doing that, you know, right now, 7 days a week. So
that's commitment, man. I do have to say that's more than me, but that's inspiring. It looks like you're a golfer. Have you always been good at golf? Are you good at golf? And I guess, do you see that being something that you carry with you with aging?
Yeah, so I probably started playing golf when I was probably around 8. So I've always loved the sport. I think I've always loved it because it's so different than, you know, football or the other physical activities that I participated in. So, you know, I try to play when I was still playing in the NFL in the off seasons, I'd get 50 plus rounds in. I don't even get close to that anymore. But I still love to play. I really do. You know, I'm a 7 handicap, so respectable, but nothing great, I would say. But I love to play. You know, I'm one of those guys that'll go out and play around by myself. So if that tells you anything.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's that's on my list of things to improve. I've definitely gotten better over the past few years. But as I think through, like, what weight training and pickup basketball and sand volleyball have done to my body between sprained ankles and torn muscles and things of that nature, golf, and I've never been a big racket sport guy, but golf is good, and it gets you outside.
Right.
So it seems like you really challenge yourself with work and doing your best to be a good, good dad and husband. And then also with your exercise and nutrition, what do you do, on a learning side of things, and, how do you keep your brain functioning, and what's been interesting, you on that side of things recently?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm a big learner. So, you know, I love listening to podcasts. I love, I recently this year became a member of Masterclass. I don't know if you've ever done that before or not. And then the company, you know, our company actually has it's called Lippert University. It actually has, a learning and training platform built into it. And so you can literally go on there and search whatever it is, whether it's, you know, you want to become a master in Excel, or you want to learn supply chain, or you want to learn cooking. Like there's classes that you can take and watch, and you end up earning points, and you know, it can get a little competitive, but also you have the learning side of it as well. And you know, so I'm always looking. It drives my wife crazy because I'm always like, hey, you need to listen to this or watch this. And we sit down to watch a movie. I want to watch documentaries and she wants to watch not documentaries. So, yeah, that's I'm always looking to learn. And, you know, I was taught very early, you know, if you can just get if you can find something that makes you 1% better, it's worth doing. So
definitely so. No, you ended up going into business, but you majored in psychology at Notre Dame. What was that like? And I guess, were there many psychology majors on the football team? I know we did not have that many in college.
No, I was the only one. The only one on the whole squad. So ending my freshman year is, you know, you have to do all your prerequisites and I was choosing my major and I was going to do business, of course. Right. Cause that's what everyone does when they get done playing ball is you get into business. And I got some great advice. And it was, you know, I was told that you could be the greatest businessman in the world, but if you don't understand people, it doesn't matter. And that I really took that to heart. And so I was still, you know, able to take the business courses, but with a focus in psychology and really understanding what makes people tick. And, you know, just like in football or other sports, you got to, as a coach, you got to coach different people, different players, different ways, and to keep them motivated. And it's the same thing in business, in the business world. It's, you know, finding what motivates and leads and what people are passionate about. And, you know, I can tell you 100%, I use my psychology degree way more than the business side every single day.
That's how I feel with some of the behavioral economics coursework I did versus the portfolio theory classes.
Right.
I can tell you, I've never used the CAPM, but I see things from prospect theory or anchoring considerably more.
Right.
What's the most fascinating concept to you in psychology?
You know, so I loved, you know, the pieces of sports psychology that I participated in, especially because the sports psychology piece goes hand in hand in the business world. You know, a lot of people don't think of, you know, a lot of people have a vision of sports when they watch it on TV of, you know, it's not a business to them, right? It's a game. And that couldn't be any farther from the truth. You know, sports, especially professional sports, is a cutthroat business. And so the things I was able to learn through that, you know, helped me a ton. And, you know, this, I think the mental discipline and the mental strength that I was able to, it just kind of set myself up for coming into things was a big part of all of it.
Definitely, definitely. What would you say the biggest challenges have been for you after football? And I imagine you probably use some of those techniques you're just talking about from sports psychology to sort of deal with that. But yeah, what would you say are biggest challenges have been?
So I think the two biggest challenges that I've had is one, finding ways to be competitive, to continue challenging myself. Obviously there's, you know, goals and metrics to hit and in business, which I love that competitive side of that, but actually physically challenging myself and finding something competitive to do in that. That was hard for me at first. You know, I did some Spartan races and just some abnormal stuff that I wouldn't normally do to challenge myself. But on the business side, the hardest thing for me getting out of football was I couldn't wrap my head around people's mentality of just accepting being average, or like the mentality of just, I'm going to clock in, do what I have to do, clock out. And, you know, I'm sure I rubbed some people the wrong way early on, but I'm like, don't you want to be the best at your job? Like, don't you want to be the top, whatever it is that you're doing? And a lot of people think I was crazy because that's the way that's just the way I'm wired. And so that took some time for me to adjust to, but it also gave me something to focus on with my team. So just continuing to find ways to motivate and lead the charge with people.
Definitely. I think that really speaks to your leadership qualities, but being able to recognize that and sort of leverage that to inspire others, I'm sure goes a long way and helps other people sort of reach their potential. Because, you know, not everything's always fun, but so much of it's like your attitude. Like, for example, I was moving this past weekend, which is just objectively kind of a pain, but like me and my buddy were just like, this is gonna suck regardless, so let's just make it fun. And right. So we were just goofing off, and we went from pouting about it in the morning to like actually having a lot of fun with it. So much of it right. is like having that attitude of like, how can I make this thing the best that I possibly can, whether you're
right
working hard on a business goal or just doing some work that's got to get done. So I love that you're able to recognize that and inspire others through that. Can you speak to your community involvement? It seems like between being on the board of directors for Notre Dame and some different community and church initiatives, I don't know how you make time for all this, but would love to hear what gets you fired up with community and sort of giving back and paying it forward.
Well, I can tell you, my wife and I, we live and die by our calendar. So, you know, we make sure that we schedule things and that we prioritize family time and business and giving back to the community. And, you know, one of the really cool things about our company is that we, every year we set a goal to raise 100,000 hours of community service. And that's, you know, that's obviously the boards and the initiatives, and but it's also just being out and serving in the community, involved on the board of my church, like you said, the board, the young alumni board at Notre Dame, just helping find unique and creative ways to bring young alums back to campus. But it's been amazing being a part of a company where that's part of the foundation of who they are. And so, you know, there's a lot of opportunities that are presented through the company that make it really easy for me to get involved. And it's all, you know, obviously with COVID last year, it made things extremely difficult to get hours in and to be involved, but we found a way to do it. And, you know, the more opportunities like that where I can get my family involved, it's pretty fun. And it gives a foundation for my kids to understand what it is to give back.
Definitely. I think now with so many people just specializing in career and just different things in life, it's easy to get sort of siloed and not break out of sort of our day-to-day and get involved with those things. So it's great that you're able to have not just one or two things, but sort of across different communities. So that's great for you. Just being cognizant of time here, I guess we can get to our final question of what lessons from football would you say have translated to you living your best life after football and life after the line?
I mean, I guess it's more like what lessons didn't I learn from football? You know, discipline, time management, leadership, you know, I think one of the biggest things, the people skills of just growing up in locker rooms with a diverse group of people of different backgrounds and races and cultures. And that's what's been so crazy to me over the last, you know, year of everything that we've gone through as a country. It's, you know, it's you when you grow up in a locker room and you're surrounded by, you know, it doesn't matter if you're black, white, brown, yellow. I mean, we're all brothers on a mission to do the same things and get the same stuff done. And so the last year has been hard to watch, to see all the turmoil and things going on. And, but that's, you know, that's one of the biggest things that I can take away from football is just learning how to find common ground with everybody. And that translates to business and life and football. It doesn't matter. That's a big piece of what it's all about.
Yep. Definitely. Whether that's you and your coworkers at Lippert or you and me as American citizens or whatever it might be, you know, we can sort of unite around the common good. So I love that. And I think football instilled that in me, fortunately, as well. So I love that. Well, this is an awesome, Braxton. I super, super appreciate it. I do know that Notre Dame comes to Columbus, Ohio in 2022 for the season opener, I think. So would love to see in Columbus, grab a beer or tailgate or something, but look forward to meeting in person one day. This has been great.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of my favorite gyms in the whole country is in Columbus, Old School Gym. So I don't know if you've heard of that or not, but Corey Gregory, they got a good thing going there. So
yeah, they've got the 5 a.m. club. I grew up an hour east of Columbus, and so we'd have guys drive over at 4 a.m. and train with Corey Gregory. There's a great weightlifting community, and obviously having the Arnold native to here is incredible. So, yeah, it's good stuff. Well, if I'm ever your way in Indiana, I'll let you know. And otherwise, hopefully I'll see you in Columbus next year.
Yep, sounds good, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Awesome. Thanks, Braxton. Take care.
This episode is sponsored by Mad Rabbit Tattoo. Mad Rabbit is reinventing the tattoo care space with their proprietary tattoo balm. It's formulated with just a few clean and natural ingredients that revitalize, replenish, and preserve your body art. I've been using Mad Rabbit for multiple weeks now, and it's given my tattoos a much brighter and more rejuvenated look. Purchase some or subscribe today at madrabbittattoo.com.